This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week, in the second of three live Compass 2018 election specials, host Charlie Burmant interviews Port Townsend Republican challenger Jody Wilkie and Democratic incumbent 24th District State Representative Mike Chapman, who are facing off in November's election. So now, let's go inside the Compass.
This is Charlie Burmant for Compass. I'm sitting here with Mike Chapman, the incumbent Democrat for the 24th Legislative District. He's been in one term, and Jody Wilkie is challenging him for another term. Let's check the mics. Mike, say hello.
Thanks, Charlie. Thanks for having us here today.
Okay, Jody.
Hi. Hi, Charlie. Hi, everyone. I'm happy to be here.
Cool. Well, I'm happy that you all are here and, you know, that I have a list of questions to ask. So, this is the long session we're coming up to, right? Or is it a short session?
Right. Okay. Yeah, 120-day session and starting in January.
Okay, so a lot goes on, but maybe if each of you could pick an issue, an obstacle that perhaps faces the legislature and how you would solve it, maybe Jody go first. What's an obstacle facing the legislature this year, and how would you solve it?
Well, I think right now we're taking a close look at taxes. The initiatives that are on our ballot are going to be a big problem. I think that we have to take a closer look at that. Actually, all of the initiatives are an issue. Our carbon tax, the building trades associations are against those. Iron workers are against those. The laborers, carpenters, operators, plumbers, pipe fitters, even PUD is against that. And yet the question remains, if the people vote it down, will the legislature turn around and enact a carbon tax? It's a good chance that they will. Mike has stated that he doesn't like the initiative process, and that's in relation to the gun bill. He has made that statement that he feels like initiatives happen when the legislature doesn't do their job. And so will this be another example of him believing that the legislature didn't do their job and therefore turning around and enacting something that the people don't want?
Okay, so Mike, response?
What I'm going to work on next year is the rural manufacturing tax cut bill. We need to spur manufacturing as the one sector in our state that has not recovered from the recession. And if we can cut the B&O tax rate for rural manufacturers, we can spur manufacturing job growth in rural Washington. And that's going to be the best way to get our economy moving forward in rural Washington. So I introduced a piece of legislation last session in the short session. It made it through committee, but it didn't make it through the full legislature. I've then spent this summer working with stakeholders around the state, and we're going to come back with a bill that's going to have solid bipartisan support. I'm actually really confident that we'll be able to pass a bill that will help our rural manufacturers.
Okay, so manufacturing what?
Well, I think that two areas, boat building manufacturing on the North Olympic Peninsula and cross-laminated timber, taking small timber from our forest and DNR lands and private lands, taking small diameter timber and turning it into a building material that's called cross-laminated timber. We can cut the wood on the North Olympic Peninsula. We have Interfor mill that can mill the wood, and what we need is the, unfortunately, then it's shipped to Oregon where it's manufactured into cross-laminated panels and then brought back into Washington. And so we are prime to attract a cross-laminated timber manufacturer to the North Olympic Peninsula, and it's going to be, it's an affordable building product. It'll help with affordable housing. It'll help with school construction. It's beautiful, and it's made, could be made right here on the North Olympic Peninsula.
So we'd have to start a new company from somewhere, or someone would start a company?
Yeah, I'm open that we'll attract a manufacturer here. If we lower the tax rate, then this area becomes more attractive to someone moving a business and starting a business. There is someone in Port Angeles right now that's thinking of starting and opening a manufacturing plant for cross-laminated timber. And when I talked with them last week, they said, look, a lower tax rate would definitely make it a lot easier for us to open that plant. Mm-hmm. So it's going to happen. It's just a matter of across rural Washington and across the state, manufacturing jobs, we continue to lose manufacturing jobs. Now, there's some globalization factors in play, but we should continue to be an attractive place for clean energy, clean jobs, clean manufacturing, and taking the wood products that we take off the woods and put it into a good building material here. So that's my number one priority moving forward into the legislature.
Okay, so another big issue around here, you know, guns on two levels. There's the gun range, which is causing quite a controversy, and then there's a general gun control argument that is kind of adjacent to it. Jody, you have stated in your material that you were against restrictions on bump stocks and automatic weapons. Is that true? Did I read that correctly?
Let's circle back on the gun issue in general. I've been a big supporter of the Jefferson County Sportsmen Association in terms of helping them to analyze and fight against the ordinance that the county has put against them, against commercial ranges, and they've gotten lumped into that. I think that the general population in this area has been very supportive of the range, and we saw that by the large crowd of people that appeared at the courthouse. I expect we'll have another large group of people appearing in Fort Worden on the 24th when we have our next public hearing. As far as I-1639, the initiative that's on our ballot at hand, that bans different types of weapons, which are, I guess, poorly defined as assault weapons, anything that has a automatic type trigger and is a long gun is lumped into this. Over 250 different types of guns are included. And it also restricts the ability for young adults to protect themselves. So I'm against those kinds of restrictions on guns, as I think most people are. I guess we'll find out when the initiative either passes or fails. I think it's an intrusion on your Second Amendment rights. And I think that initiative, it's a conglomeration of a bunch of different initiatives or proposals that failed to pass the legislature last session. So how they managed to get that through is kind of questionable. Initiatives are supposed to be single issue items, but this one has at least four in it, and it's included among them is one thing that I find particularly offensive as a nurse, and that's the idea that you have to give up the right to the privacy of your medical records when you buy a gun. So that's one of the problems I have with Initiative 1639.
Okay, but first of all, you know, what you said is you're against these kinds of restrictions and you think most people are. That doesn't really, I mean, I don't know what kind of data
you have. I guess we'll find out, won't we?
Well, I mean, if you're saying most people are, is just, you know, it's not a statement that I think you can back up.
Okay. We'll see.
But also the question I think with guns is why does someone, a private citizen, need to own an automatic weapon? What is the restriction?
Well, that's not what our Constitution asks us. Our Constitution grants us the right to do so. So why should they not? I think you're looking at it backwards. So as far as you want me to answer the issue of bump stocks directly, and I'll go there. Mm-hmm. Because bump stocks were originally designed to help people who have disabilities. And that helps them to fire a gun and protect themselves. Vulnerable people who need to be able to do that. And I don't think it's the role of the legislature to just randomly pick something and say we're going to outlaw it. Because some madman over in Las Vegas went crazy.
Okay, so Mike, maybe your view on the, first of all, maybe address whether you think this is a Second Amendment issue and, you know, your feeling about where we should go next on this gun range thing.
Well, I-1693 does not ban any weapons. What I-1693 is, it raises the age from
1639.
It raises the age from 18 to 21 before you can buy certain semi-automatic assault weapons. That's a policy that I've long supported as a former law enforcement owner and as a gun owner myself. And I'm probably the only one in this race that actually owns firearms and has a concealed weapon permit. So I'm staunchly pro-Second Amendment. With regards to the Second Amendment, your Second Amendment rights are not infringed in this country because when the Constitution was written, we had ball and musket rifles and ball and musket handguns. And you can walk into any gun store and buy a ball and musket rifle or a ball and musket handgun and walk out with no background check. You can walk in, buy them, and walk out. No background check. People aren't aware of that.
So are you suggesting
let me finish. 16, the initiative also requires safe storage, another policy that I support. Safe storage requires that if your weapon falls into the hands of somebody else and they commit it for a crime, you can potentially be liable. I believe in safe storage. All of my weapons are locked up under lock and key. My ammunition is locked up under lock and key, and that was responsible gun ownership as someone who raised two boys and didn't want, you know, you have to keep your weapons safe. The initiative process was supported by the public as they gathered lots of signatures. I'm firmly confident that the public will weigh in, but these are issues that the legislature wrestled with, and because we have a number of members in the legislature who won't support these issues, the public decided to take it to the initiative process. But again, we're not banning any weapons. We're not infringing on people's Second Amendment rights. You're still going to have access to these weapons. Already in our state, you have to be 21 before you can buy a handgun, and so we're just raising the age to 21 before you buy a semi-automatic assault weapon.
So you're suggesting that the Second Amendment applies only to ball and musket, sort of by this comment that you made earlier, which I know is ridiculous, and I think you would agree that's not exactly an accurate statement either. And I would also ask you why we can send our young men and women to war, and when they come back, then they cannot possess the same firearms that they were using over there, or wherever it was.
Well,
you know,
one potential answer to that is, you know, when you're fighting a war against an enemy, then you need an automatic weapon. Maybe
you
don't need it here.
Suggesting that they're not competent to use it just because they're here and not there? And who are you to suggest whether they need it or not? That's really not something that we get to decide. The decision has been made by the Second Amendment that this is not a matter of deciding whether you need it. The Second Amendment is about defending ourselves from a government that wants to rule over the people.
Okay,
and that's what that's all about. I'm not suggesting that we are imminently facing that, but I think we need to respect the intention of the Second Amendment.
So let me shift gears. I think we're getting away from county issues here. Mike, first of all, I just want to follow up. Do you own any automatic weapons or anything like that?
I own a semi-automatic pistol, a shotgun, and a semi-automatic rifle, long gun.
Mm-hmm.
Just a hunting rifle, not a semi-automatic long gun. But I do own a semi-automatic pistol, and okay. I have a concealed weapons permit.
Okay, so you served 4 terms on the Clallam County Commission, and that was a full-time job, right?
Right.
And you were getting...
Public service is full-time.
Right, but you were getting so much money. But what was your salary at the time?
Yeah, when I left the county, it was about $82,000 a year.
And you're pulling maybe half that
as a state representative.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So is it still a full-time job?
It's more than full-time.
Mm-hmm.
And just in the last year, I've put over 30,000 miles on my car and easily put in well over 40 hours a week. And during the session, it's 6 in the morning till 10 or 11 at night when we're in Olympia.
So you as legislators actually subsidize a lot of your... a lot of your efforts with your own money.
It does cost money, out of my own pocket.
And why do you do that?
I believe in, I've had a long-standing history of commitment to public service. I'm very proud of the fact this is my 28th year of public service. And certainly if I was motivated by just a paycheck, I probably would have picked a different opportunity in life. And I'm not motivated by a paycheck. I'm motivated by public service. And I love representing this district. I love the good work that I'm able to do on behalf. And money's just not a motivator for me.
Okay, Jody, so you're going to be, what's your main source of income now?
I'm a nurse.
Okay. And you're...
It'll be a pay cut for me, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Obviously, it's not a job that's going to bring wealth. So anyway, that's not a major issue for me, and it never has been. As a single mom, I've learned how to live on a very limited budget.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one reason why I'm so passionate about this. I think that there's a lot of people that live not only in Jefferson County, but across our district who also live on a very limited budget. And they deserve to be respected. They deserve not to have their taxes increased and not to have legislators vote contrary to their wishes. So that is one issue that I'm really passionate about. I think we can do much better as far as the housing community is concerned, getting better housing and low-cost housing. That's a big issue that I'd sure like to take on and address the Growth Management Act and other types of regulations that are preventing our housing industry from being as robust as it ought to be.
Okay, so you're a nurse now. Where do you work now?
I'm currently not working.
Because they closed Messenger House.
They closed Messenger House, right.
Okay, so the question is...
The regulatory situation is pretty tough for nursing homes. They were looking for somebody to buy that and couldn't. It was an older building, and the types of things that they needed to, the regulations that they needed to meet in order to keep it open was just prohibitive. So that's a big problem.
Well, I think the broader question is, you know, Messenger House has been around forever, and mm-hmm. now it's closed, and there's lots of reconfiguring of various senior services and facilities.
I know I have a big passion for helping out that community. It's a wonderful way to make a living.
So what can you do as a legislator to actually improve the situation for seniors?
For seniors in general? One thing is keep the taxes down. That's one thing. Seniors, what do you mean in that particular, like in nursing homes?
Well, I guess it's a very broad question, but in terms of people who are living in Messenger House and there with Medicaid or something, and then all of a sudden the place closes on them.
Right.
One
thing I'd like to see is to allow the ability for private investors to open smaller homes, in-home nursing care type situations that are maybe 5 or 6 people. I'd like to see allowances in law for people who wish to invest in that type of a structured environment where a group of elderly people, maybe they've been best friends for their whole life and they want to live together and have a nurse on board and own a house together or something. I mean, there's lots of opportunities for restructuring the way that we look at monies going into the housing industry, and that's just one of them.
So Mike, what's your response to that?
Well, I have a 88-year-old mother-in-law in Port Angeles, so I'm certainly aware of senior issues, and I did vote in a bipartisan vote earlier this year to lower property taxes. I actually voted against the largest property tax increase the year before because I thought it overshot the mark, and then we lowered it in a bipartisan manner this year. We also increase and continue to work with our local hospitals and rural hospitals. We've increased the Medicaid reimbursement rate. That's the reimbursement rate from the state to make sure that our local hospitals like Olympic Medical Center, Jefferson Healthcare, and the Grays Harbor Community Hospital can maintain the doctors and nurses and the staff that they need to obviously handle the Medicare patients that we have. And so access to healthcare is a huge issue. We actually added a second nursing program at Peninsula College because of the lack of nurses on the North Olympic Peninsula, and the hospitals have to hire what are called traveling nurses, where they come into the area at a much higher rate. And so the hospital and the college said, look, if this legislature could appropriate a little bit of money, we'll add a second nursing class. And what's encouraging is when I see the nurses graduating, they're walking right into good paying jobs at either Olympic Medical Center and across the North Olympic Peninsula. I happen to live next to 2 emergency room nurses at Olympic Medical Center, raising their young kids. Those are good paying jobs. Those are great jobs for the community. What seniors need to realize is that also we have a program that they can avail themselves at the county level where they can work with the county auditor and often get their property taxes either forgiven or deferred depending on their income level. And I know many of the seniors around the state and around certainly in our area avail themselves of the senior property tax break through the auditor's office. And we looked last year at raising the revenue, their income threshold a little bit. In a short session, we didn't get there, but it's something that I support is raising that income threshold just a little bit higher so that seniors can take advantage. What we don't want, and my father-in-law was able to live in his home until he passed away, and my mother-in-law took care of him, and we want my mother-in-law to stay in her home as long as possible. What we don't want are seniors to be priced out of their home, and so there's a number of programs that they can avail themselves. What we do now allow also is that seniors can deduct their medical expenses from their income in order to be eligible for the property tax rate. That was a bill we passed earlier this year. So those are a few issues that these are important issues around our district. We're actually the oldest legislative district by median age. We're just at 50 years old by median age. We have more home care nursing facilities than any legislative district. And obviously access to health care is a huge issue that we're faced with. So
I guess listening to both of you, nursing is a good career path.
It is.
You know, it always kind of has been. So I want to shift gears to the national political stage and how it might affect the local. I know there's a lot of real nastiness between the Democrats and Republicans. Is that reflected in the Washington legislature, Mike?
No, it's not. And actually, folks can be proud of the fact that in Olympia and their state government is still a government that works together. And in fact, the facts bear out. Most legislation is passed with large bipartisan majorities. In a short session earlier this year, we had 18 purely partisan votes. And the breakdown in Olympia in the House of Representatives is 50 Democrats and 48 Republicans. And we had 50 to 48 purely partisan votes. But what people don't realize is that we had over 556 bipartisan votes. So 18 partisan votes in a short session, 556. And some bills were voted on. Some of these are amendments. And it wasn't like we passed 556 pieces of legislation. But that shows me that that is a government that's working together. And I built a strong record of bipartisanship, both at 16 years as a county commissioner and then 2 years in the legislature. And of the 15 bills that I prime sponsored in my first 2 years, eight became law. All 15 had some bipartisan support. Most of the ones that became law were passed with overwhelming bipartisan majority. So what you do is you work across the aisle. A lot of Republican bills move forward or voted on, become law, good policy. We don't really care who gets the credit. We have a bipartisan attitude in Olympia. And I think, again, people would be surprised to know out of 18 partisan votes, 556 bipartisan votes. That is not what's happening in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is run by one party right now and very few bipartisan votes in D.C. But Olympia, we really do work hard for bipartisanship. And it's how you're going to get things done. It's building the relationships, the friendships. I have a number of Republican colleagues that I work with that will be co-sponsoring my legislation this next session. And I think that that's working hard on behalf of the whole district. So
it's like if you're looking at the Senate, for instance, or the House on a federal level, you can say, okay, well, this is a Republican initiative or Democrat initiative. And so we automatically peg the vote. So I guess what you're saying is that's not really true. We can't assume a Democrat or Republican position.
No, we pass a lot of Republican-sponsored pieces of legislation in Olympia because they're good bills, they're good policy, and they're good for the state. And what's good for the state is good for the state, no matter who came up with who sponsored the legislation. There's a lot of good Republican ideas that come forward. Serious people putting together serious legislation for their district and for the state, and we look at that. The committees that I serve on are always looking at bipartisan pieces of legislation. Public safety, ag and natural resources, and transportation have a number of bills that are put forward by Republican colleagues and move right through. They're good pieces of legislation, and that's what people want. They want a government that works together. They don't want this partisan bickering and sniping, and we don't have that in Olympia. We have a good bipartisan team approach. The education funding bill was bipartisan. The tax cut earlier this year was bipartisan. Those are major pieces of legislation. The transportation package a few years ago was bipartisan. Major pieces of legislation that we work on a bipartisan manner.
Okay, Jody, so do you agree with this? Or?
Well, there's a lot to agree with as far as the need for bipartisan cooperation. I think that we can always work towards that. I think, too, we have to sort of define bipartisan because technically a 54 to 43 vote would be considered bipartisan by those numbers because a few people stepped across the aisle and voted along with a bill. But it's not very bipartisan. So there's some of these bills that Mike was talking about that he sponsored were bipartisan. For example, increasing the length of buses to include bike racks, that was voted pretty close to bipartisan majority. Agreeing that we don't want to use toxic anti-fouling paint on the bottom of boats, that was a unanimous vote. I think we can all agree that that's a pretty good bill. The Rural Jobs Program also was voted unanimously. So no complaints about those. Department of Transportation advertising had only 2 nay votes against that one. But things like the riparian easement and the marble murrelet, these are things that affect our environment and the ability to use our resources, our timber resources, in a way that benefits the public. I mean, these are things that were sure they're bipartisan at 54 versus 43. But they were passed with a strong Democrat majority and a very weak Republican support. And there's reasons for that. Right now, the Department of Natural Resources, they overlook about 1.2 million acres of land, and 580 plus acres of that is set aside not for timber. These are trust lands that are supposed to be used to help finance schooling and, the schools, the colleges, the corrections facilities, the Capitol grounds, these types of things. They were built into the Constitution of our state back in the 1880s. And yet we're setting these things aside and can't use them. Where's the money going to be made up that we're taking out of these timberlands? Where's the jobs that are going to replace the jobs that used to be timber jobs? This isn't a partisan issue. But when the economic analysis is missing from taking away these exempted lands, it's not a fair representation to the people.
Okay. So we're running toward the end. I'm going to do a lightning round, which means let's not go on too long. Just answer the question quickly if you can. So Greg Brotherton and John Cook were here last week, and they remarked about how difficult it was to represent their district because it includes western Washington, and it's very diverse and very geographically spread out. What kind of problems do you face representing this very diverse district, which is actually more diverse than the third? And Mike, first, please.
The sheer size is a challenge. It's 3.5 hours. I was at a campaign forum yesterday in Ocean Shores, and I mean, I left my house at 9 a.m. and showed up for an event at 12:30. And by the time the afternoon went on, I got out of there at 5 and didn't get home till after 9 o'clock. So just the sheer size, when I have to travel to the far south end of our district, there's a lot of hours that are kind of just trying to make some phone calls. But just the size, I think, like I said, I've put over 30,000 miles on my car in the last year representing this district. I think also just understanding that you have various communities and understanding, you know, getting to know the community leaders in Port Townsend and Squim and Port Angeles, but also Forks, Hoquiam, Ocean Shores, Elma, McCleary, getting to know the mayors. There's 3 boards of county commissioners, 3 port sets of port commissioners, 3 PUDs, and they all have various competing, you know, interests, and they need help from the legislature. So just the amount of constant input from people throughout the district, averaging, you know, hundreds of emails throughout a day, and certainly throughout, you know, well over, okay. I'm not going to say hundreds a day during the legislative session, but by the end of the week, it's multiple hundreds of emails from constituents and trying to reply to those on the weekend. So I would often spend a lot of my Saturday replying. I try to reply to every email that comes in. And that is a challenge. I do my best. I'm probably a little behind right now because of the travel for the campaign, and I apologize for that. But generally, during session, I reply to every email. So just the constant input from the public, because you have to read it, you have to reply, and you have to have a dialogue. But and it's the largest legislative district by land size in Western Washington. It's about the third largest in the state, and it is very politically diverse.
Okay, Jody, last words.
That's the last question.
No, that's the last question.
So I'm sorry that's the situation. As far as representing the people that live in these diverse areas and faraway areas, I think the biggest issue that they tell me is they feel like they're not being represented. They feel like they're not being heard. Maybe the people that are the leaders are getting time on Mike's calendar, the mayors and the council members and the commissioners get time on his calendar, but the people are the ones that I've been talking to, the individuals, and they tell me that they don't feel like they're represented. One of the things that's a big problem with the housing market is the fact that there were over $3 million worth of houses that were thrown into a dumpster over in Port Angeles from the PA Housing Authority. I was told that these were crummy old houses, or Mike mentioned they were crummy old houses with asbestos and lead pipes, but that's not what the appraisers seem to think when they appraise them for double the cost of what it took to put them in place. So $3 million worth of houses went into the dumpster because that wasn't watched. this is not representing the people.
Okay, so that will have to be our last word.
You have been listening to host Charlie Burmant conducting an in-studio interview with Port Townsend Republican challenger Jody Wilkie and Democratic incumbent 24th District State Representative Mike Chapman, who are facing off in November's election.